Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty's got the day off today. Earlier this spring, a fourth grader posted a video online in which she didn't speak, but rather held up cards to tell the story of being bullied by her peers at school. "They threaten to kill me, and they tell me to kill myself," reads one card. "Kids don't even want to go near me whenever I sit at a lunch table. The kids get up," reads another. Cassidy Warner's story affected deeply many who watched, but Cassidy is not the only child to go online with a story of victimization. There are similar postings from other young people, and this is during an era in which there is an increased awareness of diversity and efforts to counteract bullying, including anti-bullying laws. New Jersey, for instance, has one of the toughest in the country on the books. So what's happening, even as there are reports that efforts are making some positive inroads into lessening the amount of harassment, it is still occurring with some frequency. And here to shed some light is Stephen Leff, clinical psychologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where he co-directs CHOP's Violence Prevention Initiative. And he joins us in studio for Radio Times. Hello, Stephen.
Thanks so much for having me here today, Mary.
Sure. And Justin Patchen is a professor of criminal justice at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. He is co-founder and co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center and joins us from Wisconsin Public Radio, Eau Claire. Justin, welcome to Radio Times.
I'm glad to be with you, Mary. Thanks.
And before we get going, I'll get the number out for anyone who might want to touch base, call in during this show. 888-477-9499 is the number to call. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So, Stephen, to you first, what immediately goes through your mind when you hear a story like that of Cassidy Warner's?
Well, I think that it's tragic because we see kids reaching out, and sometimes we don't see the signs. We're not looking for the signs. And I think that other children will talk about bystanders today taking positive action to help kids, teachers, parents opening lines of communication so that children's cries for help are better heard before it becomes tragic.
Hmm. Justin Patchen, and yet despite these efforts, as Stephen mentioned, we're still seeing videos like that from Cassidy Warner.
That's right. Unfortunately, they pop up every so often. And, bullying and cyberbullying, these behaviors have been kind of a national concern now for quite a few years. And while some of the behavior, I think they're improving. I think we're getting better. It's certainly not where it needs to be. And so there's more work to be done.
So let's try to define bullying. It can be, Stephen Leff, subjective at times, as we know. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention include three characteristics: intentional aggression, a power imbalance between aggressor and victim, a repetition of the aggression. So those are the three. Let's talk about intentional aggression. Stephen, what does this include, and how do we distinguish this from, say, ordinary teasing?
Right. So by intentional aggression, that means that a child is meaning to do something on purpose to another, to be mean, to harm them, either physically or socially. And I think the intention is really important because we do see kids having occasional conflicts or even fights. But when we see that intention that's repeated over time, just like you said, in a context of a power imbalance with one person having either being stronger or having a stronger social reputation, then it really becomes a problem. That's when we start thinking about bullying.
Mm-hmm. Justin, when does teasing cross the line in your mind?
Well, it crosses the line when there's basically knowledge by the person doing it that what they're doing is hurtful, is harmful. Because, in my experience, I talk to a lot of young people, and they're engaged in hurtful behaviors towards another, and they don't really realize the seriousness of what they're doing. They think they're just joking around. They don't think it's that big of a deal. And that's kind of where that intent comes into play. And so it's up to us to convey to young people that these behaviors are hurtful, and better understanding that intent. So when the person who's engaged in the bullying behaviors is aware that what they're doing is actually hurtful and it's not just a joke, but then they continue to do it, well, that's clear evidence of intent. So there's going to be conflict, there's going to be teasing, there's going to be low-level disagreements, of course. That's a part of childhood and adolescence. But stopping those behaviors from escalating to the point where the person who's being targeted doesn't have any recourse and is affecting them at school and at home. That's when it really becomes a problem.
Justin, you say most students who are bullied do not report their experience to adults. Why not?
Well, they're afraid, in short. They're afraid it's only going to make it worse. This is something we've been tracking for a long time. One of the first pilot surveys we did in 2002 or 2003, we asked specifically about cyberbullying, whether young people had been cyberbullied and then if they'd reported it to others. And we found that fewer than 15% of those who had been cyberbullied back then had told an adult about their experience. So about 10% told a parent and about 5% told somebody at school. And we've been tracking this ever since. And on average, over the last 10 years, it's never been above about 25%. Well, it averages about 25% of those who have been cyberbullied have told a parent, and about 10% have told somebody at school. But in our most recent study, which was late 2016, we saw a little bit of a jump. And I just wrote a blog post about this a couple days ago. And so it's hard to draw any conclusions from kind of one data point, but perhaps we're getting better. And my whole argument is, if we want to encourage reporting, we have to basically respond better. And adults have to do a better job of responding effectively to the bullying behaviors. And if we're able to do that, then young people are going to run to us with their concerns. They're just afraid it's going to get worse if they tell us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Stephen Leff, address that for us, if you would. You know, if I tell my parent, if I tell a teacher, it's just going to get worse on the playground. Yeah. It's going to get worse on the bus where people can't see, or walking home from school where, you know, the adult isn't there.
Unfortunately, a lot of times children who are bullied don't realize that there are many others who are bullied, that they're not alone, and that by speaking out and actually getting help, that can make a big difference. We need to alert parents and teachers so that we can all work together to try to prevent bullying. I think often children feel like there's something wrong about them if they're bullied. And we need to teach kids that in order for everyone to work together to create better social and emotional learning climates at school, we need to be in good communication when someone's not feeling good, when someone is being made to feel victimized, so that we can really change that trajectory. Because the trajectory is not good. You know, victims over time are rejected by other children. They have trouble in their interpersonal relationships as they get older, and they often experience anxiety, stress, and loneliness. And, you know, I think it really is preventable. But one of the first steps is adults reassuring children that it's okay to talk about this, that we need, you know, to be putting this on the table so that we can all work on it together.
And yet children need the acceptance and the they want to be accepted and loved by their peers. And at certain ages, it's probably even more important to them than it is for adults. So they don't want to stand out. They don't want to be isolated. How do you get around that?
Right. And so I think, you know, to get around that, I think we have to change the climate within schools. So in our violence prevention initiative at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, we've been developing bullying prevention programs in partnership with students, teachers, and parents for urban children to teach them about problem-solving steps, anger management strategies, empathy, and most importantly, how to be a positive bystander or an upstander, if you will, so that the climate supports people stepping up and helping others, that it's not okay to ignore an issue when you see it. There are many steps that you can take and still be safe, both as adults and as kids.
Justin, in your work, what have you found, what have you concluded that is within the bully that causes a bully to act aggressively toward another child?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, most times the young people who are engaged in these behaviors, they're not aggressive. They're not violent. They're not, intentionally hurtful. They just are just joking around with their friends, and they don't see the harm in what they're doing. So, I can't put a specific number on it, but I would suggest that that'd be the majority of the cases. And so, it's a fairly simple, straightforward response to that is holding, addressing the behavior and pulling those young people in and explaining to them that look, this is hurtful. It violates our community norms, our family standards, our school policies, and it's got to end. And when I speak with school counselors who address those behaviors in that way, most oftentimes it does. Now, there are certainly subsamples of students who are aggressive by their very nature, or you know, they have home life situations that might cause them to be more aggressive, or they're basically fighting for popularity, or the bottom line is they see some benefit in it, whether it's social or physical, and we need to identify what that benefit is to them and try to address it.
All right, let's get to the phones. Justin in Philadelphia, you're live on Radio Times. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I want to pick up on this idea of affecting the climate in schools. One of the things that I've noticed as an educator over the past several years is that some bullies are really good at dancing around in the gray area between behaviors that are clearly acceptable and clearly unacceptable. Like they'll make little comments that clearly contribute to a hostile atmosphere for some students, but that are crafted in such a way as to give them an out when they're called out on it. So it's difficult as an educator to call that behavior out without looking like you're picking on them. But at the same time, you don't want to stand idly by because you know it's contributing to a larger trend and making somebody's life miserable. So I was hoping your guests could comment on what educators could do about that problem in particular.
All right. Thanks, Justin. Stephen Leff?
Yes. I think, Justin, you're bringing up a really good point, and that is aggressors, especially relational aggressors, those using gossip, leaving others out, are incredibly socially influential. And part of the social manipulation in relational aggression, harming others through relationships, through social standing, is that they're actually very they're very strong in terms of their social influence, in terms of their leadership potential. And I think that's the real key. We've seen in some of our research studies that many of the children who are relationally or socially aggressive, they're very influential. And what we need to do in our interventions and what we try to do in our programs is to turn the tide and give them opportunities to use their social influence in a positive way. In other words, to call them out in a respectful manner and encourage them to step up and to be a leader, to teach others how they can best move forward to help create a better climate as opposed to a worse climate.
We're up against a break, but you know, I think that that sounds like it's right on track, but many educators are overwhelmed. They're in a classroom with maybe 25 or 30 kids. They're worried about resources. How do they have the time to do this, to find, okay, here's this person and I'm kind of clued into what they're doing, and let me get this person over here while they're trying to teach a classroom of kids? And there might be more than one bully and there might be a child in crisis. How do you handle that, Stephen?
Well, I think that good partnerships are necessary with school counselors, with outside agencies, with the school district, so that, teachers can wisely use their time to create better learning environments, which should have an impact on the climate.
All right, we'll pick up on that thought in just a moment. You're listening to Radio Times. We're talking about bullying this hour. 888-477-9499 is the number. More ahead in just a moment. Stay with us. This is WHYY in Philadelphia. You're listening to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in today for Marty Moskowain, and we are talking about bullying this hour, which continues to concern parents and educators alike despite increased attention over the past decade. Anti-bullying laws are now on the books in every state, and school interventions are widely taught. But how is this effort paying off? In studio with us is Stephen Leff, clinical psychologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where he co-directs CHOP's Violence Prevention Initiative. And joining us from Wisconsin Public Radio, Eau Claire, is Justin Patchen, professor of criminal justice at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and co-founder and co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499 is the number. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. Going into the break, we were talking about identifying bullies and trying to kind of get them aside and educate them as to how they can have a positive influence on their peers. And Justin, I guess the question was, educators, I'm speaking for some of them who will tell us, I'm sure, that they're overwhelmed with what they have to do in the classroom, just trying to keep everybody on the same page and to get them to learn and to help with resources. How much do we put on their shoulders? How much is expected of them in this?
Too much, Mary. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head in the sense that we're asking them to do so much with so little. And we've seen decreasing resources in schools as far as counselors and school psychologists and social workers. And so the kind of support that educators need to address these issues is lacking. And I think that's a big problem.
So, Stephen, what would you ideally want to see in any one school setting?
Right. So I think, and I would agree, there's a lot placed on the shoulders of our teachers today, and they have, I think, the hardest job in America. I mean, I think that there are two things. One is that taking 5 to 10 minutes a day, if it can be set aside to help kids and to talk about how others would feel in certain situations, to empathize, to talk about perspective taking, and to look for opportunities for kids to be a leader. Everyone wants to be a leader. In our programs at CHOP, our friend-to-friend program, it's a small group intervention where we go into the schools and we help support the teachers and help support the counselors by teaching kids problem-solving strategies as well as leadership promotion skills so that they then have opportunities to come back and to teach their classmates what they're learning. When programs aren't available or aren't accessible, I think that teachers and counselors working together take small amounts of time, 5 to 10 minutes, to routinely check in with kids and to be a positive role model as to how they handle conflicts when they come up.
What does that mean?
Right. So that means that sharing their own experiences is appropriate, or in a challenging situation, potentially them taking a step back, saying, I'm modeling being calm, and now that I feel calmer, I'm going to try to address this. So I think that all of us as adults need to keep working not to be reactive to aggression, but instead to take a step back, to be able to look at the situation, and to sort of have a more measured response. And that takes practice. And I think if our teachers are able to be role models, that should go a long way.
Let's talk about talk some more about parents. Pennsylvania State Representative Frank Burns, a Democrat from Cambria, wants to see parents pay up to $750 if their child is a habitual bully. He's proposed legislation to that effect. Justin, what do you think? Should parents be fined if their children bully others and parents do not or cannot prevent repeat occurrences?
Well, I'm skeptical about the plan. I wrote a blog post about this a few years ago when quite a few cities across the country and a few in my home state of Wisconsin proposed this plan and even in some cases implemented new ordinances that would fine parents if their children are found to have bullied others. I get the interest. I mean, we want accountability. If things aren't working at school, if it appears like parents aren't doing their jobs in terms of preventing these behaviors, then, you know, we as a society want accountability. I don't know that the effort is going to be effective. Of course, as a researcher, I'd love to evaluate, you know, whether these things are fruitful. But the reality is that, first of all, young people aren't generally deterred by the threat of formal punishment. They're not going to stop and think, well, wait a minute, I better not bully my classmate because I might get fined or I might get arrested. And they're certainly not going to stop and think, I better not do that because my parent might get fined. So instead, they're more influenced or they're more persuaded by kind of their connections, their relationships between parents and teachers and other trusted and respected adults. You know, I think on the extreme end, as far as another tool in the toolkit in terms of trying to address these behaviors, if all other measures fail at school and at home, and if it can be shown that the parent is sort of indifferent to the behaviors or potentially even encouraging it, then perhaps that's the step that needs to be taken. But again, as a researcher, I'd like to see these initiatives evaluated, because this isn't the first time we've heard of these kinds of proposals. Mm-hmm.
Stephen, parents are the first teachers. Kids pick up an awful lot, you know, of behavior from what they learn at home. What should parents be aware of as far as what's happening in the home that might be encouraging bullying in their children?
Right.
What sort of behaviors might they pick up on?
Right. So I think that you're right. Parents are the first teachers, and they need to be looking for signs if their child is bullying others. And often those come into the home. So in other words, if their child is coming home having been sent to the principal's office, is getting involved in frequent arguments or fights, is coming home with someone else's possessions, I think those are important things from the school that come home. But at home, it's how they deal with their siblings and how they handle tough situations. And that's where I think that parents really need to be positive role models to show healthy problem solving and conflict management. And if kids aren't able to sort of modulate their emotions at all, that's really a sign.
What are negative behaviors that parents might be exhibiting that kids pick up on?
Well, I mean, I think that unfortunately, you know, all parents, all adults at times get frustrated. And I think if we're overwhelmed, if we're frustrated, you know, sort of losing our cool, you know, showing too much emotion, I mean, I think that we need to demonstrate and to talk about tough situations with kids, but at a time when we're calm, when we're feeling like we can really teach them and that we can really model the types of behaviors we want to see.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the phones in just a minute, but many parents have a hard time believing that their child might be a bully. I mean, so look at some of those behaviors that we kind of accept some of those behaviors. If a child's getting in trouble at the principal's office, if a child has somebody else's possessions, then those are some red flags.
Absolutely.
Okay. To the phones we go. Berlin in Philadelphia. You are live on Radio Times. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Radio Times.
Oh, yes. Listen, children have always been tough on each other for centuries, you know, and bullying is really nothing new. It's an ongoing social issue. I did a research paper for a professor about that, bullying in schools. There are many different kinds of bullying. There's a bullying called verbal bullying. There's social relationship bullying. Of course, there's cyberbullying, and high-tech devices are making it very easy for kids to spread bullying, you know, spread their attacks on a scale that wasn't possible years ago. I like to call it bullying made easy.
Yeah.
I know I was bullied, and sometimes parents are at fault, because sometimes parents make your children intentionally stand out from the crowd, set them up to be ostracized from their peers.
Berlin, you know what? Let me jump in just because we're up against the clock, but you bring up an important point and one we wanted to get to. That is cyberbullying. Just imagine back in the day before the internet, you know, a handful of people might have witnessed somebody being bullied. And now online, of course, it's you know, thousands potentially and even more. And so the victim's humiliation is increased exponentially. This stuff can live online forever. How do you even begin to counteract something like this?
It is a challenge. And even it's interesting, even if you know, somebody posts something mean about you online, and even if nobody else sees it, the perception among the target is that everybody sees it. And so it's difficult. I think it also creates opportunities, this cyberbullying, because by definition, with cyberbullying, there's always evidence. And so that can be captured and can be used to hold offending parties accountable. It can be a tool used by the target to gain some control over the situation. There are also a number of tools within, you know, social media and certain websites and games to block users, to ignore users, to report users. So it's really a double-edged sword in terms of the potential reach and scope, but also the opportunities that targets have to address the behavior on their own terms.
Mm. So Stephen, if a child is being bullied online and a parent becomes aware of this, then the first impulse is to say, all right, you're off Instagram, you're off Facebook. Is that the right way to go?
You know, just restricting access is not the right way to go. I think what's much more important, some of the research that we've done, is really talking to the child and understanding what's happened so that a report can be made to the school if it's, you know, from a classmate. And I think that it's very important that parents stay calm in these situations.
Hard to do.
Hard to do. Again, taking that step back, yeah. Taking a deep breath, but staying calm because it's important to ask a lot of questions before reacting as a parent. So what happened? You know, who at school knows about this, whether it's cyber or whether it's in-person bullying? And then thinking about what as a parent we can do to reach out, to report this as appropriate. And so I think it's a lot more complicated than just removing access. But I think it's also – it's helping to foster friendships for our children with kids who maybe are nicer too. So not only reporting and trying to take care of that situation, but it's building a cadre of friends for your child that are going to treat them respectfully, that they are going to be able to share, to do things together without having to worry about an Instagram post, yeah. For example.
Well, sometimes the situation can become extreme. I mean, there's a story out of Houston where an 18-year-old, you know, she killed herself a year or so back because a group of bullies at school, you know, created fake dating websites about her and said she was available for free sex. I mean, when it gets to that point, what do you do as a parent and how do you protect your child and get them, you know, to a healthier place?
Right. And then, you know, I think that's a great question. I think, you know, there's a time and place where the police need to be involved, where we need to think about, you know, who the report goes to so that it can be handled sensitively, seriously, and efficiently. Mm. Because what you're describing, we need to address quickly to reassure the child, but also, you know, to send a message that, for example, in schools that we're not going to tolerate this behavior, that we're going to try to include others. We're going to, you know, use social media for positive as opposed to making feel kids left out and starting rumors about them.
Justin Patchen, education, education, education.
Yeah, exactly kind of what Stephen said. I mean, a young person does not commit suicide after one experience with bullying. And so there's been a lot of failures along the way to stop those behaviors from happening. And it's really a desperation by the young person coupled with a lot of other issues going on in their lives. And so, if again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier. If we're effective at stopping these behaviors and on the minor end of the spectrum, then it won't escalate to the point where we hear about these tragedies.
Yeah. Well, you know, and unfortunately, and we'll only look at this for another moment or so, but, you know, the national suicide rate for children between the ages of 10 and 14 has apparently doubled over the 7-year period ending in 2014. And, you know, it just seems that you're hearing more of a not uncommon bullying tactic for some kids to tell others they need to kill themselves. That's enormously disturbing. Justin?
It's very disturbing. But again, I don't think that the kids who, you know, wield that weapon fully understand what they're saying. And we need to, like you said, educate them. We need to show them that, look, you might just be you think it's a joke, but it's not a joke. And you certainly don't want that on your conscience if the person goes through with it.
So, and we have an email which addresses this. Do schools have classes for parents or students that address bullying in, you know, this sort of situation as well? So, Stephen, you've talked about what you're doing at the Violence Prevention Initiative at CHOP. How widespread are, you know, education, are classes, bullying classes, you know, education classes in schools, to your knowledge, in the Delaware Valley?
Right. I think that there are a number of different classes, I think, that are available through the School District of Philadelphia and other districts. With some of our work in the schools that we work with, we do offer some parent outreach workshops. But I think that the really important point here is that school districts, schools, teachers, and parents need to work together to provide forums to talk about these issues. I think the more that they're put in a corner or silenced because we're embarrassed or because we feel like it couldn't be my kid, or, you know, I don't want to feel ineffective as a teacher because I don't know how to handle that. That's a real feeling that we all come together and we talk about, you know, how we can work together to make a difference, how we can improve the climate of our schools slowing kids down with problem solving. But as parents, when we get a report knowing what to do and feeling that we can talk with our children, not when there's a conflict only, but every day, to find out who their friends are, how they get along with others, and what they're concerned about.
Keep the lines of communication open. So we got an email from Karen. It's mostly the school administrator's responsibility to stop the bullying in the schools. They make the most money and have the least responsibilities. I'm not sure, Justin Patchen, if the school administrators might agree with that. But again, it comes back to resources in schools. This is probably a good time, too, to bring in New Jersey's anti-bullying law, which is enacted, I think, in 2011, and really does focus on what's going in the schools. How does this work in New Jersey? If a child is being set upon by others and it comes to the attention of a child's teacher, where does it go from there?
Well, New Jersey is unique. So, right, they passed a law in 2011, which is a very comprehensive law and actually does some pretty good things. It creates bullying specialists in every school. So we talked about lack of resources. Well, theoretically, at least, every school will have a bullying specialist. Every district will have kind of a somebody who, even at the district level, specializes in addressing these bullying behaviors. And schools are required to collect information about these bullying incidents and report the number of incidents that come to their attention to the State Department of Education every year. There's certain requirements for bullying based on a protected status, whether it's sexual harassment or based on ethnicity or race. So I think it's a step in the right direction, except that, again, even though the legislation kind of directs schools to do certain very promising things, the legislation didn't provide near enough resources to do those things. And so every school is required to have a bullying specialist, but there's no additional money to fund a new position. So who's going to take on that responsibility? Oftentimes it's a school counselor or somebody who's already in that school. So it comes back to that lack of resource issue.
All right. We'll talk more about this after the break. We are talking, we're looking at bullying this hour of Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings. Jordan, Marty's got the day off. If you have questions, here's the number, 888-477-9499, questions or comments, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. More just ahead. You're listening to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We're focusing on bullying this hour, which continues to concern parents and educators despite increased attention to this issue over the past decade. Our guests include Justin Patchen, who is the co-founder and co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center, and he joins us from Wisconsin Public Radio, Eau Claire. Also, Stephen Leff, clinical psychologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and co-director of CHOP's Violence Prevention Initiative. Going into the break, we were talking about New Jersey's anti-bullying statute, one of the toughest on the books in the nation. And Justin, you were talking about the fact that there is a lack of resources. Stephen, I know you wanted to jump into this as well.
Yeah, I think that the New Jersey law is certainly a step in the right direction. But I think that, it also mandates that schools have programs to address bullying. But I think that the next step would be making sure that the programs that are chosen by each school are evidence-based. They're based on good science, good research that show they're effective, that they're feasible for a school to implement. Because we know that not all good programs are feasible for schools to implement given how busy they are. So it needs to be not only feasible but a good match, that it's worked in communities and schools like the one considering whether a program would work or not. So I think evidence-based, feasible, and a good match, I think, is really important when we think about, choosing programs to go into our schools.
So Justin, 7 years in, how would you characterize the impact of New Jersey's anti-bullying law?
Well, frankly, I don't think we know. I've been to New Jersey several times in those 7 years, and I've spoken with students and educators, and some schools are, the schools that have resources are doing well by it, and they were pretty much doing the same kinds of things required by the statute already. But the schools that don't have the resources are really struggling, and they're, taking away from certain areas in order to satisfy the requirements of the law. So, and again, I'm not aware of any good research. I mean, Steve is exactly right. So we do need to encourage evidence-based programming, but we also should take the time to attempt to evaluate the effectiveness of these kinds of laws, particularly at the local level, at the school level and at the district level, as opposed to just comparing countrywide. So there's a lot more that we need to learn.
Okay, we've got a lot of calls and comments coming in. Email from Anne Marie, who asks, what does it take to put an end to bullying? How about we start with the POTUS taking some advice from his wife regarding online bullying? Without leadership at the highest level, what can be expected of our children? And, you know, Melania Trump, First Lady Melania Trump, is addressing online harassment and internet safety. What can the First Lady reasonably accomplish here, Justin?
Well, I think a lot of people are skeptical about what she can accomplish, but I'm hopeful, and I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. I appreciate that she's taking this on as a platform, because it's definitely needed. I think she can serve to direct resources to kind of fund evidence-based programs, to catalog the evidence of those programs in a way that allows for dissemination, meaning, you know, making schools across the country aware of the types of programs that are being done in schools that do show some promise or some success, so she can champion those things and direct federal resources to better understanding what works. And so I'm hopeful.
Stephen Leff, you know, this is a delicate question, but when politics enters the classroom, as it has done over the past 2 years, how do educators handle this? I mean, we've got stories, you know, about young people chanting "build the wall" at an assembly or on a school bus. What do educators say? What would you, if you were standing behind them, how would you handle this?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not sure there's the best answer for it, but the kinds of things that I think about is that we need to use the voice of young children and take that motivation to help create more positive climates, to think about what are the steps that they can take to motivate schools and communities to build more inclusive schools, respecting others' perspective, and thinking about how they can become future role models and leaders and demonstrate that, you know, it's not just one voice, but all our voices together can make a difference.
Back to the phones we go. Donald in Springfield, Missouri. Welcome to Radio Times, Donald.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. As I stated to your producer, my wife and I turned out to be, I don't necessarily want to use the word victim, but it turns out we got sucked into this whole bullying conversation in a weird culmination of all the things your guests have touched on thus far, i.e. politics in the classroom, bullying children who know how to stay in the gray area, parents who don't want to accept that their children might be bullies. We got sucked into a situation as a culmination of all of these things.
Did it involve a child of yours, Donald?
It absolutely did. We got called into school because we were told our child had bullied someone. Well, we go to school, the parent looks me in my face and calls my child a bully multiple times and wants to call the police in. Through further investigation, what we found was that her child had been bullying our child, and our child stood up and defended himself. And the moment he did, the actual bully yelled out, "I'm being bullied." And the school's zero tolerance policy for bullying put a red flag on our son and drew us into a parent-teacher conference, etc.
So, how do we
have to make sure that we're not going to an extreme in either direction? I'm not trying to diffuse it or make it less serious, but I want to make sure that someone can't simply say something about a child and it not be backed up in some way. And now my child has a record in school that says he's a problem when he hasn't been.
Donald, thank you so much for the call to Radio Times, and we're sorry for your trouble, but boy, what a mess Stephen left, and this is not an unusual story, I'm sure. He said, she said, she said, she said, he said, he said, and what's an educator or a counselor to do?
Right, and I'm sorry to hear that story, too. I think, you know, one of the things that the caller said was that the other parent confronted his son, and one of the things we know that really is important is that as hard as it is, parents don't confront other parents. It's too emotional, and it makes it much harder to get to the real story. And so I think that talking with and making an official report. So almost all districts now, they have online reporting systems where you can go in, report. Typically a week to 10 days, you'll hear back the results of the investigation. You have opportunities to appeal that if you have concerns. And I think that, following that path, while very difficult, hopefully will help to prevent someone just crying bully and sort of a reaction that maybe doesn't get into the complexity of the issue.
Justin Patchen, do parents ever confront the bully, the parents of the child who is being bullied?
Yeah, just to go back to Donald's point earlier, if the system would have been in place, whether at the school or the family, to address the initial bullying, if his child would have felt like there was a recourse that he could have reported his initial experience with mistreatment instead of doing what many, many targets of bullying do, which is retaliate and lash out back and then end up getting in trouble themselves, then maybe this wouldn't have happened. So it's, the first point is just to remind your children not to respond and not to retaliate and, maybe save the evidence and deal with it in other ways. But it's interesting you ask about the parents confronting either the one doing the bullying or the parents of the one doing the bullying, because I get asked by parents quite often whether it's appropriate if my child's being bullied, should I talk to the parent of the one who's doing the bullying? And for years, my advice, kind of what Stephen said, I would be reluctant to suggest that as an appropriate response, because parents usually aren't qualified or have experience to kind of deal with that kind of a situation, and it's difficult. Your child's involved, emotions are involved, but I mean, it could be different if you have a relationship with that parent, if you know them from sports or PTA or something like that. But it's best to get the school involved, because even if it's not happening at the school, it's oftentimes affecting what's going on at school if it's happening online. So I think there's a lot of steps that parents can take, and they just need to take the one that they think is most beneficial in their particular situation.
So even though Stephen left, it might be counterintuitive because you're angry and you're upset that your child is being bullied, take a step back.
Absolutely. I think taking a step back and looking at the situation, that's kind of role modeling what we teach kids who get into conflicts, to give ourselves that time to look at the situation. And if we do that as a parent, we can be our best advocate on behalf of our children. If as a parent we get upset, we get emotional, then we may not be as effective and we may not be heard. So I think it's important to take that step back.
All right. An email from Colin who says, I think the discussion of an end to bullying is a bit unrealistic and counterproductive. It would be similar to hoping for an end to children arguing with each other, an end to peer pressure. The question, and what I see as the most pressing actual new need, is coping mechanisms for kids who are dealing with online bullying. And we did talk about that a little bit earlier. I mean, is it part of the human condition here, what we're dealing with? Will we ever see an end to all bullying? Is it part of human nature? Justin, what do you think?
I don't think it's a part of human nature. I mean, there's certainly going to be conflict. There's going to be disagreement. And disagreements within relationships is an important part of, childhood and adolescent development. But again, whether all those behaviors could be accurately characterized as bullying is a different question. I don't think they can. But we do want to stop those. I don't even think parents need to intervene in all conflict and all disagreements. I mean, you need to support our kids and give them tools and resources to try to address those behaviors themselves, but then, of course, step in when they do need help. But if it gets to the point where the child is incapable of dealing with those issues, then we as parents and educators need to step in to offer support.
All right. Kristen in Wilmington, Delaware is joining us now on Radio Times. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. So what's your question or comment?
We had a situation a couple of years ago where my daughter was being bullied when she was in college. And I began a conversation with the administration, which I was really reluctant to do, figuring she was an adult. But it had gotten kind of out of control. And I was told that bullying was not a word that was used in higher ed, which was pretty alarming to me because it seemed pretty much like that was what was happening. And the college handled it pretty poorly. It was a bad situation. But I'm just wondering if your guests have anything to say about bullying as it pertains to older kids.
Just a quick question for you, Kristen. Did they have a word for what your daughter was going through?
Not really. I mean, they called it a dispute.
Okay.
But it was really kind of went beyond that. Both of the young women were on a team together, and they were living together, and they were in the same major. it was everywhere she went, basically.
Okay. We're running up against the... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just said a little more than just a kind of a roommate spat.
Okay. Well, we're running up against the clock, so let's bring Stephen Leff into this. Any thoughts for Kristen?
Well, I think you're bringing up a real important point that we've talked about some this hour, which is, you know, how do you differentiate between a conflict and bullying? And it sounds like, unfortunately, in this situation, what may have been ongoing bullying because of the proximity, because of, you know, kind of maybe the repetition or the having classes together, that maybe was missed. But I think that, you know, this is the real question that educators are facing today. You know, what's an aggressive, what's a conflict or one-time aggressive incident that's a teachable moment versus what's a more pervasive, insidious form of bullying that really requires a more extensive response.
And is it also helpful sometimes to remove the young person from the situation? If the college kid is living with somebody else, it might be hard to get another living situation. Didn't sound like the college is particularly sympathetic, you know, at least from my read of this. Onboard, you know, even the child in an elementary school classroom, put them in a different classroom, or some parents might say homeschool. I mean, is that helpful or harmful?
Well, I think it has to be considered. I mean, because we know that aggression happens in a context, especially among girls and young women. So I think that that's a legitimate thing to think about.
All right. Justin, as we start to wrap up, tools for young people to take with them if they are being bullied, things to keep in mind.
Well, there are a lot of resources out there. I would encourage listeners to check out our website, cyberbullying.org. We have a top 10 list for teens, for parents, for teachers on how to respond to bullying and cyberbullying, how to prevent it. So there is information out there for those interested in kind of learning more about how to respond. But just simple things with respect to cyberbullying, like understanding the social networking site and how to block people and how to report people and understanding kind of the terms of service and realizing that on most reputable websites and games and apps, bullying does violate those terms and therefore can be reported. So like you said earlier, education, education, education.
And Stephen?
Yes. On our website, chop.edu/violence, we have a number of fact sheets as well as bullying prevention resources that can be helpful to check out and help you to navigate through this really challenging process. I think the pieces that I think are really important is that we can be positive role models for our kids. Our kids can be positive bystanders or upstanders when they see aggression and violence. And as parents, we can improve communication with our kids so we don't wait until there's a conflict, but instead are supporting them and their friends every day.
And let children know that it is okay to tell an adult.
Absolutely.
If they feel they're being set upon. All right, Stephen Leff, great to have you along here on Radio Times. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Stephen Leff is a clinical psychologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where he co-directs CHOP's Violence Prevention Initiative. And Justin Patchen, it was a pleasure as well. Thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Mary.
Justin Patchen is a professor of criminal justice at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and he is co-founder and co-director of the Cyberbullying Research Center. And as always, if you get a chance to check out our podcasts, connect with us on social media, you'll find everything at whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Diana Martinez. Our producers are Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. Thanks so much for joining us for Radio Times.